The Government Accountability Office has 8 recommendations it believes are essential to a modern federal pay scale system, but it's up to the Office of Personnel Management to make that pay scale happen. Robert Goldenkopf is Director of Strategic Issues at the Government Accountability Office, and Robert, Congress, of course, has a say in this too. Take me through some of the more important attributes that you have produced here and what they mean for federal employees.
Sure. Well, just by way of a little bit of background, Congress asked us to identify attributes of a modern and effective classification system, and then the extent to which the current general schedule is consistent with those attributes. So we went out, and among other things, we spoke with over 25 subject matter experts representing different sectors, employee unions, federal managers and executives, former OPM officials, academia. And so you can imagine we had lots and lots of different perspectives. But then what we did was we took that information, consolidated it into 8 buckets or attributes, and what we found was that the general schedule is, at least in the design, is consistent with many of those attributes. And key among them are internal equity, and that gets at the notion of equal pay for equal work of equal value, essentially regardless of what your occupation is. So long as it has, they have similar qualifications and responsibilities, you should be paid at the same grade level. Another attribute was external equity, and that's where a federal position should receive about the same pay as comparable positions in the non-federal sector. Other attributes included transparency, which, you know, may have a system that's easy to understand, flexibility, where you have a system that meets the needs of individual agencies. So those were some of the key characteristics that we identified.
As I read your report, which you can find a link to at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, Robert, the gist that I took away from it is that the concept of the general schedule is good. The execution is a little shaky, at least as far as how it stands today.
Well, exactly. It's important to remember that the general schedule, it's a system for organizing work primarily for purposes of pay. And it's a consistent system, and it's there to ensure agencies play by the rules. It's 65 years old. I believe it celebrates its 65th anniversary next month.
What a party that will be, too, I imagine.
Well, exactly. And it's the foundation of the personnel system for the white-collar workforce. Now, when the Act was first passed in 1949, the workforce was obviously very different than it is today. People were primarily clerk typists, and the grade levels were much lower. So you had the majority of the federal workforce were in, I think, grade levels that were no higher than a grade 7, and about three-quarters or so were in clerical positions. Of course, over time, as government and federal responsibilities got more complex, the nature of work changed, but the general schedule didn't catch up to it, or in an attempt to catch up to it, it just became unwieldy and clunky.
I think what you've done here, Robert, is a very effective job of crystallizing what a lot of people have said on this program, again, from all sides of this perspective, as in the subject matter experts that you talk to, and that is that the thing that the general schedule needs more than anything is headroom. When the general schedule was first put into effect, my colleague Mike Causey tells me the bulk of federal employees, overwhelming majority of them, were 3, 5, 7s, 9s and the equivalents, and now they're all concentrated at 11 and up, and there's just no headroom in the system anymore to be able to move people through and make it look like the spread exists that really does exist in the work that people are doing.
Well, there's that. There's also the nature of work changed so that, you know, for example, we use the example of cybersecurity. That position just didn't even exist.
Mm-hmm.
The federal workforce became a knowledge-based workforce. You have many more positions now. As a matter of fact, the majority of the workforce are in either professional or administrative positions. Even within particular occupations that did exist, what an economist does today is very different than what an economist did a generation or so ago. And so in an attempt to keep up with these changes, we've put in all kinds of patches and fixes, but the general schedule, you know, if you use the analogy of the foundation of the white-collar personnel system, it just has cracks in it that we've been trying to patch, and it's just not working.
There are a sufficient number of agencies and a sufficient number of employees that have looked at the general schedule and said, we don't like it enough that they've gone outside of it. You write, the proportion of federal employees covered under alternative personnel systems increased from 6% to 21% of the white-collar workforce from 1988 to 2013. I had a member, one of the local presidents for the National Federation of Federal Employees on within the last 2 weeks or so, I suppose, Paul Randazzo, talking about the agreement that his union just reached with the Defense Department to kind of redo or update or revamp or whatever you want to call it, the National Security Personnel System, which is one of those alternative systems. Mm-hmm. What strikes me is the ones of these in government that are successful parallel, it seems, the recommendations that you've made in this report about some of the changes that should be made in the GS schedule. They've addressed some of the issues in these alternative systems that you're proposing in this report.
Right. Well, agencies will do what they need to do in order to carry out their missions. And so what you see here are agencies are making workarounds and adjustments, primarily its pay, to be competitive in the labor market for the kinds of positions that they need. And I think, you know, you mentioned the statistic that we had about the increase in the proportion of employees who are covered by alternative pay systems. Most of that increase, and this is not surprising, were in those occupations that required advanced degrees, like science, technology, engineering, and it's all an attempt to stay competitive in the labor market. The problem is that you then have a system of haves and have-not agencies, and so the agencies wind up competing with one another instead of with the federal sector.
Robert Goldenkopf, the Government Accountability Office, looking at the general schedule, and you can find a link to his work, his team's work, at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. You write in this report, OPM's responsible for establishing new and revising existing occupational standards after consulting with agencies. Between 2003 and 2014, OPM established 14 new occupational standards and revised almost 20% of the occupational standards. However, no published review or update of 124 occupations since 1990. That's going on 25 years now that 124 occupations haven't been touched by OPM, right?
Well, exactly. And in fairness to OPM, and we bring this out in the report, is that establishing these new standards is very labor intensive. It you know, sometimes there are very nuanced of differences between, say, a GS-12 accountant and a GS-13 accountant, and so it takes months. And so, you know, we know that OPM's workforce is smaller than it was in years past. So, acknowledging that, we made a recommendation that OPM then just needs to prioritize how and which occupations it updates the standards for.
The prioritization process, though, I imagine you mentioned that this whole thing is rather labor intensive. That's probably the hardest part, isn't it? Because that's not anything. I can't imagine a way that you would be able to automate that. That requires groups of people to look at each of these manually.
Well, exactly, and that's why, and this is the question that we have for OPM, is in revisiting the system, do you keep the current approach where you do establish new standards, and on the one hand, that updates a particular job or occupational series, but on the other hand, and this gets at the tensions that we were talking about earlier, it adds complexity and it diminishes the transparency and the simplicity of the system. So then what alternatives are out there? And some agencies have moved to a broadbanding approach where they reduce either the number of grade levels or the number of occupational series.